Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk, and we got another good show for you planned today, and I hope you're ready. The title of the show is Student or Athlete or Student, however you want to call it. But we're gonna be talking college athletics, you know, and certain particulars of that. But anyway. Woo, how y'all doing today? I hope everybody's having a wonderful day. It's a bright, sunshiny day here. Had a little rain early in the morning. Now that them moved on, and it's just a nice, beautiful day outside. So I hope when you get off from work or you do whatever you got to do, you're out there enjoying, go and enjoy some of it. You know what I mean? Because it's always fun to do that. That's for sure. Oh, I'm sorry. Divine Design. She says dark there. Okay. Well, hopefully the weather is not too bad, even in the dark. Woo! That's for sure. All right, y'all. You want to become part of the show today and want to participate? Just give me a call, 347-838-8622. Email me, ericlesstalk@gmail.com, or join us in the chat room, www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk. And those are all the ways you can participate today. And I'll be looking forward to hearing from you. It's interesting. It is very interesting that I picked this topic today. Because I've had this thought process all the time about college athletics and them getting paid. But I think this takes it whole to a whole different level. But we'll get to that anyway. So, what y'all think? Now the other day, it was what? Let's talk flight MH370 for a moment. Now, the other day, they supposedly saw 120 items floating in the Indian Ocean, right? Okay. They're saying there's 300 objects floating in the South Indian Ocean. All right, ranging from 6 feet to 53 feet long along 1,675 miles southwest of Perth. That's Australia, y'all. Now, these pictures were taken Monday, okay? They were taken Monday, and the day is Thursday, so... Now, is the 300 a part of the original 120, or is this 300 different objects that are floating now? You know what I mean? Just a thought. I mean, that's a thought. What you know, and it's amazing. 3 weeks in, after now, the Malaysian government comes and says, well, the plane has been lost, correctly? All right. So now all of a sudden, all these objects are floating in the ocean. What do y'all think about that? Or am I looking at, am I putting too much into it? Maybe that's what it is. I'm thinking too hard into this thing, right? It just seems too convenient that all this stuff is coming up. Of course, there's no proof right now of what it actually is, whether it's pieces from the plane or not. But it's still amazing to me how once this statement has been made, now we got all kind of stuff floating out there, you know, satellites, anti-satellite. Really? You know, these are the same people that once they saw the blip, didn't tell anybody for a week after the fact. But now your satellites are picking up a whole bunch of stuff, right? Man, come on, y'all. Let's be real about this. I still say something is not right. Of course, we'll never find out unless some of the people come back, and we know that's not going to happen because they didn't give them new identities and send them on different parts of their lives. They may have wiped their brains, too. You know, just erased all their memories. And see? Yeah, I know some of y'all saying, there he go again. But no. If you remember some shows back, I mentioned that they were working on an implant to where they can place memories into your brain. You know? See? It's kind of coming together now, huh? So it's not too far-fetched to say, well, okay, some people are still alive, but they have no memory of what happened. So now the stage has to be set to make it seem as though the flight has crashed. You know, to cover up all this other stuff. I'm just saying, I know some of y'all think I'm just out there on left field somewhere, but no, you know. You have to look at it all the time. Now, when H2O get here, I know he's going to say, all right, Mr. Talk, there you go again. But I'm just giving you theories. Yeah, it's my theory, my opinion. It is. But the more it comes around, the more things start to present themselves, it sure look like a cover-up and a whole bunch of other things, right? Yeah. Interesting. And then President Obama decided he wanted to go and see the Pope. he had to go and see the Pope. And they had about a two-hour meeting, and everybody was happy, joyful, and all that good stuff. Interesting. Now, you know, there is speculation that the Vatican is, you know, how can I put it? Part of the New World Order. They control the international bankers, and they're also a part of the Illuminati conspiracy theories. And with the president being all over there, you know, they're talking and they're smiling, they're giggling. What type of visit you think this was? First U.S. president to have to go that just went over there to see the Pope. Could they be planning something bigger? Was this just a meeting to make sure to solidify what's soon to come? I said conversation. Don't be talking about no convention. Whatever. Oh, you're not talking to me. But anyway, so these are things that we're not talking about. Of course, the media has jumped on it, and, you know, the president gave him a box that from the original Catholic, the first Catholic church built in America, you know, and then Pope gave him some coins that somebody accidentally knocked over, and they quickly recovered them. But neither one of them seemed any upset about it. Well, why? Oh, and then United States Congress has this have went ahead and approved the billion dollar guaranteed loan to the Ukraine. Yeah. And they did some other money also. You know, now here's my thing. We guaranteeing loans to them when we supposedly don't have any money for our damn own country. How is that working? How is that working? How are we going to guarantee money to somebody else when we can't even guarantee, we can't even come together, they cannot come together and decide how to help our homeless survive? Do y'all see the craziness in this? This is just out of control. But see, while everybody is concentrating on this flight, all that is going under the table, being pushed along. I say, you know, sometimes we just need to wake up, man. We just got to wake up. And it's, wow. I know. Y'all say I'm talking sideways out the black beside of my neck. I'm not. I'm just telling you the observations that I have, the things I have observed. Okay? And, you know, sometimes have to really think about that. Really have to think about that. Now, let's get back to the plane for a hot minute. Of course, this rolled all into everything. Let's get back to the plane for a moment. Now, I think it was a week ago, one satellite said they found something floating. I think it was China's. A satellite said they found something floating in the ocean that was at least 78 feet long. Well, what happened to that? I guess it was there for one moment, and then all of a sudden it just took a dive, huh? It just went through, and it was gone. It's interesting, huh? It's a game, y'all. It's a game. It's a game they're playing, and they're going to continue to play it. Because there's those of us out there just gullible enough to believe it. That's right. But we'll be okay because we're gonna wake up one day. That we are. We're going to wake up one day. All right. Well, that concludes my pre-show rant. I just had to put that out there, man. I was just saying. Okay, let me get a shout-out to the chat room. We got Deep H2O in the house. Of course, Divine Design, Granny Ganja. Then we got Guest 1857. I'm sorry. Guest 857-861-901-925. And then, of course, we got Open Mic in the house. So, you know, everybody's getting here. That's what I'm talking about. Everybody's getting here. Man, and, you know, I got a quote for y'all today, man. I'm telling you, this quote is going to make us go, it is. You know, and it's one of those quotes that I just, hey, and I had to give some thought to, you know. But before we go ahead and get the quotes in and get on with the topic, student or employee, we got some other business. We got some other business we got to deal with, okay? And here it is, y'all. It's time for your music for the day. And there was something else planned for the music, okay? I'm going to say there was something else planned for the music. But, however, I could not find it. I'm going to have to talk to my music director to see where it was. And we may include it tomorrow in tomorrow's mix. But I always have a standby. And here it is, your Thursday song of the day. right, y'all. That was your song of the day, Stevie Wonder and Skeletons in Your Closet. Boy, and some of y'all got two or three closets full. Let me stop. I know. I shouldn't have said that. But you know who you are. I don't need to say any more about that, do I? Skeletons in Your Closet. Mm-mm-mm. And you know what, though? You know the thing about skeletons in your closet, man? It's okay to have skeletons in your closet because everyone has them. Everyone has them. But for those that want to pick and bring and have and go into other people's closet to bring their skeletons out, must remember, you got some of your own. You know, you need to clean your closet out first before you go into somebody else's. Don't you say that? I know some of y'all shaking your head right now because, yeah, that's such a truth. Skeletons in Your Closet. That's by Stevie Wonder. And, you know, Granger Ganji said she was doing the spank. Man, I haven't heard that in a long time. The spank. But, you know, let's talk about some things here for a minute. You know, everybody has something that bothers them. Something they feel that they have to hide. And the more you listen to songs from back in that era, you start listening to the words, you know, because back then most people just listened to the beat. But if you listen to some of them words that's being said in these songs, you really get a different perspective of what the song means and where their mind was at the time. Because a lot of these songs, especially back in the 70s and 80s, were more protest songs than anything else. They were. You know, and you know, it just became, it's one of those things where you really do need to listen to some words. Like my opening song, Happy. How many of you actually have sat there and listened to the words of Happy? It's a very uplifting song, and it's really, really, really. Now, the question came in, when did they start using cuss words in the music? You know, I can't really say when they started doing that. You know, I guess you could say they always have. However, you know, it was censored and hidden a little better. You know what I'm saying? And or they had code words that used in place of the words that's used in music today. Does that take away from the effect music has? Yeah, it does. You know, but you know, it's interesting. You're gonna play a song from the 70s compared to a song from today, and it could be the same song, and you would not recognize it. You know what I mean? Because you know, you got the remake Kings and Queens out there now, or better yet, they just decided to just steal the beat here and two because everybody likes that beat. You know, then they put some words on top of it and they got a hit. Now, where's the original music today? There's no original music. You know? Oh man, that's all I'm gonna say. There ain't no music. There's no music today. Real music, anyway. You know, everybody's got to steal a beat. A beat. Enough about the music. You know, that was your song of the day, Stevie Wonder, Skeletons in the Closet. Man, I'm telling you, that reminds me of some days. The days back out there sweating, the big butterfly collars rocking and just getting it on. Anyway, all right. Now it's time for the quote of the day. And you know what? I'm not even going to bring it. Yes, I am. I'm going to do the drum loop. I am. All right. The quote of the day. This quote, you know, first let me set it up. You know, I was sitting here and I was trying to find a quote of the day that really made some things, you know, bring something to the forefront, make you think a little bit. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, man, I can't find anything. So, you know, you have to go into that deep meditation mode. You know, I hope some of y'all know what that deep meditation mode is, you know, to where you shut everything out and you just sit back and you just, you know, just float into the atmosphere, you know, take that ride for a moment. To me, man. Yeah, the quote came to me. And this is so simple, but so many of us fail to do it. It really is. We fail to do it. And it's simple. You ready? Here's the quote. Be you, do you, know you. Do I need to say that again? Be you, do you, and know you. Now, I guess I'm going to have to explain that one because I know I done lost a lot of people on that one. Huh? Oh, Lord have mercy. Okay, here we go. And I should have said it the other way around, but I wanted to say it like that. You know, here it is. Number one, be you. Be you. You know, a lot of times we are so busy trying to make somebody else happy that are never ourselves. Never. Never ourselves. You know what I mean? We don't know, we don't have no way of being ourselves because we too busy trying to please everyone else. That's right. We trying to fit in. We trying to fit in. You know, you got to make it, man. You got to be like that cat over there. Even on the job. You know, one person is successful, and now everybody got to do the same thing. NFL is the same way. You know, corporations the same way. If something is successful, dang it, we're going to stop being us, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to do it like they do. We're going to be just like them. Did that make any sense to y'all? Now, do you? That's right, do you? Now, once you realize that you're copying somebody else, do you. Be you. Stand up for who you are. Yes, you're going to have some ideas that's different from others. Yes, you are going to be looked at a little strange at sometimes. But do you. You know, do you. And that would say the thing we're going to do. Do you, boo-boo. Do you. You know, do what is going to make you happy. You know, as I mentioned before with the BU, we spend so much time trying to change ourselves for them. And when I say them, I mean whoever. Society. You know. Job, school, you know, we do. And you fail, and we fail to do us. You know, do what makes you happy. That's how come a lot of people are so frustrated from their jobs because they're not doing them. They're doing everybody else. Do you. And you may be surprised at what happens once you start doing you. Okay, now let's put this in some type of clarification here for a moment. Now, if you're one of them people, you know, let's get it right. Don't go in there, you know, with your belly hanging out and you got thongs sticking out your ass and everybody can see it. And, you know, if that's what you do on your off time, that's fine. Conduct yourselves accordingly, but still do you. You know. That's what I'm saying. No, if you're nasty, okay. Well, you just do you at home. But what I'm talking about is just don't conform. Conform is the right word to everything. Do you. And the last one, know you. And I think this one is the biggest one of all. Know you. You know, and you know, it's funny. It's funny because we can ask this question now of, and I'm just using it as an example, who is H2O? Ask H2O. Who is H2O? Now, being H2O, he may be able to answer that. If you sit that thought and say, who is Mr. Talk? You know, what makes Mr. Talk tick? What? You know, a lot of times you couldn't answer that because you never sat down and gave it time enough to where you can figure out who the heck you are. You know, and I'm not talking about what other people see you as. I'm talking about what you, who are you? You know, what makes you tick? What do you like? What you don't like, for real, you know? What are your inner feelings? You see what I'm saying? Know you. You have to know you. Everybody can say they know you. That's fine. You know, you put out a question on Facebook, who is so-and-so? And you get all kind of responses. Blah, blah, blah. Right? But however, change that to you ask yourself, who am I? And there we go. There you go. You're out there in no man's land because you really don't know who you are. And that's the third one. Know you. Okay? I ain't mean to make the quote so, you know. I mean, it's a simple quote, but, you know, it sounds simple, but yet is so complicated. To a certain point, be you, do you, know you. That's it. That is it. And once you do that, you're green, man. You're gravy. You're gravy. Especially if you know you. You know. And, oh, let me clarify this because this just came to my head. So I know somebody thinking about that. I'm not talking in a sexual way either. I mean, you know, hopefully you already do that. But, you know. Mentally know yourself. Know yourself. Know yourself. Know you. Now, if you know you, you can be you. If you know you, you can be you. You can do you. Simple. You know what I'm saying? That's easy. That's easy. Then when the storm hit, you all good. You go out there dancing in the rain all day long. Because why? Because you know you. You're being you. And you're doing you. Dancing in the rain. Man, I like that. I like the way I brought that around together. I missed two quotes together today. All right. Woohoo! You know what? I think, you know, that is so good. I'm going to give myself a clap on that one. I am. Ah! That's right. That was a good one there. Anyway, let's see. Deep H2O says, I treat all like mature adults, Granny. If you are in water over your head, the assumption is you know how to swim. Well, see? And there it is, H2O. You got that word in there that gets a whole lot of people in trouble. Assumption. Take the first three letters of that word, and you know what that means. We used to have some saying in the military, to assume is to make an ass out of you and me. I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out there, man. I am just putting it out there. Oh, Lord. Oh, H2O said, I am taking it out of context. I'm sorry. I just put my thought process in it. But, you know, if I'm taking it out of context, well, I'm being me. I'm doing me. And I know me. You know, H2O, Now, see, you're trying to put some logic into this thing. Because he says, why would you be in water over your head and not know how to swim? Now, see, logically, okay. Literally, okay. I can see your point on that. But in when it comes to life, there's a lot of people in over their head and don't know how to swim. That's called they live in somebody else's life. You know, they trying to keep up with the Joneses. Understand? So by doing that, you know, they're living beyond their means. They're not being them. They being somebody else. That's a good point, Noeris. Noeris says some people think they know how to swim, the know-it-alls. That's right. And they jump right off into the deep end. You know, as you said, H2O, with no lifeguards, no nothing. Nobody watching. They just gone. Woof, they in there. You know what I'm saying? They in there. But yet, they can't swim. Now they drowning. Ah, okay. Okay. I said adult, Granny. I'm trying to learn. Okay. Let's see. As you said, I covered that segment of the population. He needs to mediate. Okay. I don't even know what the heck you're talking about right now, H2O, but you'll bring it to me in a minute. No error said head first. That's right. Head first. All right. If enough of me blabbering and talking nonsense, because I know y'all tired of me talking now. Oh, okay. My bad, H2O. My bad. Okay. So, look. We talking today. Students or employees? And this is something I think we kind of had one time before. this is something we talked about before, and we're talking college athletes, right? And this is why. Let's see. Northwestern football players won a first-round battle in the union battle. Peter S. Orr, region director for the agency's Chicago office, said in a 24-page decision, all right, that players, Northwestern football players, met criteria to qualify as employees under the National Labor Relations Act. Okay. They basically went on to say that the players are employees and eligible to vote in a union election. Y'all hear what I'm saying now? We talking about college football players now. College football players. He also said that an athletic scholarship constitutes a form of payment in exchange for work. So what y'all think about that? Can college football players be considered employees to the point to where they can form a union? And that's all this is about. It's about one football player, a quarterback, and he's leaving the schools. I mean, he's graduated. And he started his petition to where he wanted to form a union of the football players. It's interesting because Peter Orr said they met the criteria to qualify as employees under the National Labor Relations Act. You know, and that was done in 1935. You know, it just set the parameters of how employees should treat employers should treat employees and how they should react when it comes to unions. Now, it's interesting because if you really look at it from the athlete's point of view, do they really have a leg to stand on? Okay, they go there on scholarships, full ride scholarships, right? They get housing, books paid, what else? You know, don't forget the education that most of them forget about. You know, and but yet, for all that, what are they required to do? Go out there and play football, right? So if they're required, does that come out to employee versus employer? You know, with the college being the employer and the football players being the employees. Is that what's going on? Should they be allowed to form a union? Now, we know the word union, let's be real, the word union is not a favorite word of anybody in business at all. You know, up in Wisconsin, you know, that they disbanded their union up there, teachers union. Just so they, you know what I mean? So now we got football players saying we want a union of our own. We want a union of our own. Because right now we are employees in the school, because they bring us here to perform a job. You know, they say technically they are not on the payroll of the institution they attend. Well, you know what? I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, H2O, because under this ruling, it says, and I'm going to read it for Bernard, an athletic scholarship constitutes a form of payment in exchange for work. Scholarships are a transfer of economic value. School pays for tuition, fees, room, board, and books, plus receives a substantial economic benefit from playing football. If we go back and look at that, they're not on payroll. They are on the payroll, right? In a roundabout way. Because think, if you don't have the players out there playing, then you don't make no money. And everybody know in most schools the football is what they make, is how they make their money. The football programs and some of the basketball programs. We know this. You know? H2O says no, it's not. But yes, it is. Okay, let's put it this way. I'm going to ask you this question, H2O, since you're there. I'm going to ask you this question. Do you feel college athletes should receive some type of stipend while they're playing? While they're playing, do you feel they should receive some type of time? And let's not forget, last year, Grambling's state football team, they went on a strike because they were having to ride buses through two or three states to get to a football game. To get to a football game. Proper way to treat your students? Now, if they were just students, then why was it so important that they get to this game? Yeah, are you seeing what the way I'm going here with this? So are they students or are they employees? If you look at all the way certain things are written and you consider what goes on, they're employees. They are. They are employees. There's no way you can get around that. They are employees. I know I get them on the line eventually. All right. Now you are placing too much value on the players. Not necessarily. The players are who make money for the school. That's what this whole thing is about. The players are playing, but the school's making all the money. The players get injured. Okay, thank you for playing. See you later. So where's my medical? You know what I'm saying? That's part of the reason why they want to have a union. Let me bring H2O in so we can talk to him a little bit. Hey, H2O, what's going on, man? Are you there? Okay.
You yeah, know, I'm here. Listen. I'm here. How are you, Mr. Talk?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I figured this would be easier than me trying to type a whole bunch of stuff in the chat room.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But before you go, let me see. Okay, hold on for a minute, okay?
Go ahead.
I got a couple of things in the chat room that says scholarship is not enough. I think they should get paid at least minimum wages. They give up a lot of their time. Yes, Panda Bear says paying athletes to play college ball would take the fun out and ruin the game. That's a possibility. And Granny Gunn saying back to the ghetto you go. And Open Mike say look at them like interns. That's the interesting point. And Granny Gunn said majority don't make it to the pros. That is a very true statement. Little as you know, it's known, a lot of them sure don't. But anyway. So those are some of the comments that we have in the chat room. And, you know, I think all of them are valid points. They really are. But the one about look at them like interns, that's an interesting way of looking at it. It really is. But anyway, go ahead, N2K. I'm ready to hear your side of it. Go for it.
Well, I mean, it's different ways to look at it. Now, being that I was fortunate enough to partake of that system. Okay, first of all, it's a trade-off, number one, because if you don't have the scholarship, okay, that means that whatever institution is giving you that scholarship, otherwise you wouldn't even be able to afford to go, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's number one. Number two, mm-hmm. We're talking about a system that's been in place for quite some time. Now, if you're going to look at college sports, hell, pro sports is worse, much worse, because you're not going to play as long, and you're talking about when they're done, they discard you. Oh, trust me, on the professional level, it's much worse than that, because one minute you're earning all of this money, and the next minute you're not.
Okay.
So if you're not duly prepared for it, You know, when you have lots of money, it's easier to lose that when you don't. Number two is when you look at it from a college level, okay, let's assume that they form a union. Okay, who are they paying union dues to? And for what reason? Because what it's going to do is it's going to devalue them going into the pros. That's how that's going to work. It's going to have a ripple effect so that when the pros go back up for its collective bargaining agreement with the NFL Players Union, where they determine salaries and rookie salaries and things like that. Because with the last CBA agreement, they virtually cut rookie salaries in half. And the players were the ones that ratified this. Because you had 6, 7, 8 year players who were proven. And then all of a sudden, here comes a rookie that would get a signing bonus for $35 million. And they've been in the league 8 years, been to 5 Pro Bowls, and they haven't seen a $35 million bonus yet. So the players got rid of that one, and that was for the players. That was for the college players coming in. Now the college players coming into the NFL have no bargaining power whatsoever. They cannot hold out.
But hold on for a minute.
I'm giving you the whole spectrum of how this works. So if players started paying themselves in college, that's going to drive the wage down for those players when they want to go into the pros. They're going to drive down their own wages naturally.
But okay.
Go ahead and form a union. Get paid while you're in college. Because if it's going to that level, then obviously your objective is to get to the next level and get paid. If you want to get paid in college for playing football, damn it, you sure as hell want to get paid in the pros. That's more money. Right?
Okay.
I mean, logically.
Logically,
now you're hurting your bargaining power going into the pros because you're already making money at it.
Okay, now let's go back here for a moment. See, because you the way you're speaking right now, it's like all college players goes to the pros, and we know a very small percentage of college players go to the
exact number. I'll give you the exact number. 2% of college athletes across the board make the professional ranks in their respective sports. In the NFL, there are 1,650 jobs. In the NBA, there are 450 jobs. Now, you look at how many Division I basketball schools there are, how many Division I football schools there are, and that'll show you the inequity in the amount of people who are trying to get in to the amount of positions who are available. Chances are basically slim to none.
That's true.
You got hundreds of thousands of college football players that come out of college every single year. Hundreds of thousands. There's only 1,650 jobs as a player, and a lot of those players are returning. So the amount of available jobs is reduced even more. That's why they're wanting to pay. That's why they want to get paid.
Well, but I understand that part of it. But let's go back to the let's just stay in the college realm right now, because you said something earlier, and I want to go back to it. You say the school gives them a scholarship, and then they go play football. Is that not what you said?
That is correct.
To an institution that they would
no other way be able to afford to go to school.
Right. But at the same token, you can look at that scholarship as a contract. And the contract is for you to come play football for us, and the result is I will give you housing and what have you, correct?
No, that's what the scholarship is. It is a contract.
Exactly. So now, listen. So on the real world, if you are a civilian and you go to work for somebody, a big corporation, they have you sign a contract. And your contract says, okay, I am hiring you to do such and such, and this is what you will do for this contract, correct?
But you're being compensated based on what you're doing with the scholarship.
That's their point right there.
Mr. Talk, with the scholarship, you're being compensated by being given a higher education, by having not to pay for where you live, by not having to pay for any food. So you don't have to pay for the basic things that a lot of the other students have to pay for. And they can be on academic scholarship. And they have to pay for.
But see, once again, you said they will be compensated. That's their compensation, right?
Right.
Okay,
my
then.
No,
because see, if they're being compensated, that shows that sounds to me, and I'm understanding this now. It sounds to me that the school give me a scholarship. They my employer. I get to go work for them, play football for them. That makes me the employee. I'm being compensated by you know, whatever they give me with my scholarship. So I am technically I am an employee of the university.
I'm not debating that. My point is, okay, say we start paying these players to play college ball. Where is the benefit in this, and who is it benefiting? Is it benefiting the institution? No, because I wanted to correct you on something. Most higher learning institutions get the majority of their money through research and upper division studies, not through sports. I'm not negating the amount of money that sports provides for these universities, but they get far more money. The Stanfords, the major universities get far more money in grants based on research. Okay, they're in the billions when it comes to that.
And you don't think they make millions off the football players every day going out there beating themselves?
Like I said, I'm not discrediting that. But the only you mean to tell me that Harvard doesn't even offer athletic scholarships? Okay, Princeton doesn't offer athletic scholarships. To go to Stanford costs 50 G's a year. 50 G's. Last time I checked. Now you're gonna give a person the equivalent of $50,000 a year, and then you want to pay them on top of that?
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Now, well, that's what they're saying. They say they wonderful. And now let's keep this. You know, this is not all of college football right now. This is just Northwestern University. Okay.
I understand.
Okay, it's just Northwestern University. However, you know, they make a great point. Now, you say Harvard and all them don't, give scholarships, but they got a basketball team in the NCAA right now.
But they don't offer athletic scholarships. Not one of those basketball players is receiving an athletic scholarship. But yet
they're out there putting their health on the line and risking permanent injury for the school.
Trust me, you graduate from Harvard, you ain't got to worry about a job. That's the least of your worries.
That used to be the least of your worries, but that's not what we're talking about.
Exactly. And we know what the graduation rate is at an institution like that. Because graduating from there means something. So the majority of their students graduate. That shit carries weight. That carries serious weight. So if you got kids that are coming to your basketball program and they're bypassing scholarships to go to your school, come on.
That just means they got a lot of money.
They know what's up.
They can afford it. But let's get back to Northwestern, though. Because they're backed by the United Steels Worker Union. You know, that's who has a little bit to do with this also. So they're just not, they're just not out there just coming out by themselves.
I wouldn't think that they would be, because this doesn't benefit them by themselves. So there has to be somebody supporting and or sponsoring this. Because there's no incentive for college players to do this on their own. Everybody's at a different institution. Everybody's at different schools. I mean, having a union on one campus in no way affects all the other hundreds and thousands of campuses across the country.
But here's the thing with this, all right? Let's say, because, you know, it's not a done deal. They just won this battle. Of course, you know, they're going to keep fighting and go until it gets probably to the Supreme Court. But here's the other deal. If this happens to go through, that this was spread to other conferences and colleges, because this would set a precedent.
Yeah, it's gonna spread to the institutions that were not built on scholarship.
You're right. Now let me read a quote from former congressman and Fox News contributor Alan West, and he's vehemently against the players' actions. And he stated, "Well, it has happened. Liberal progressive socialists have struck at my favorite sport, college football. The decision has just been made by regional labor relations panel to approve the suit filed by Northwestern University football players to unionize. Northwestern is in the Chicago area. Any surprise? I do believe schools should provide a small stipend to athletes during their season. However, unionized, no. They are therefore an education, not employees of the university or sports mercenaries. This may fly at Northwestern, but not in the Southeastern Conference." Now, that's the man say it right there. And I find it interesting that he used sports mercenaries. So basically what he's saying is, if they should happen to form a union, basically you get athletes coming in playing for the, you know, who can pay me the most money. What you think about that?
I think it's a horrible idea. I think that's a horrible idea. Because the athletes, the athletes are too young. They're not developed. The NBA has experienced that to a great degree, to where its product is completely watered down. And then they had to change a rule because NBA had the most relaxed rules. Guys could come in out of high school in the NBA. Then all of a sudden there was this rush on getting either high school players or guys that had only played 1 year in college. And if it wasn't for a couple of players in the NBA, it would literally kill their league right now because they got so many young kids in there that just they're not at that level yet. Okay, wanting to get paid for something that you're doing and because you're putting in all this time, man, please. When I was playing, you didn't have to pay me nothing. I did that shit for free. And even when things started coming my way, that didn't change. I would have done it for free because I loved what I was doing. It wasn't about, me trying to cash in and I understand that part of it. However, when you go into it with that frame of mind, you're giving yourself a shelf life. You ain't going to last long. If that's your motivation, you're not going to last long.
Well, you know what? You have a shelf life anyway, but here's the thing. You know, what about, because we already know the star players, you know, they're getting theirs on the side anyway, right? And most of them feel guilty after they reach the pros or get mad and want to tell a story about it. So why not just go ahead and like the comments say, and I do believe if the NCAA would say, okay, look, we're going to give y'all a stipend during the season, you know, to help out, I think it wouldn't be much talk of unionizing anything.
No, you know, because then they're just going to want more.
Look. Come on.
That happens in every aspect of life. You work on a job for so long, they pay you so much money, prices go up, you want to get paid more money.
All right, so why not pay these athletes or just go and let them unionize so they can negotiate a stipend? You know,
I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm not saying you can't do it. All I'm saying is that in the end, it's not going to benefit the athlete. Okay, the university will continue to benefit any regardless. So it doesn't really matter to them. They're going to get their billions of dollars, whether it be through research, sports, a combination of the two. They're going to get their money anyway. So in the end, in the long run, I personally feel that it hurts. It's going to hurt the athlete more. Yeah, they'll be compensated. Well, experience has shown us very clearly that a good majority of them don't even get degrees anyway. So now they're going to have more of an incentive to get a degree because they're getting paid? Doubt it.
Well, you know what though? In a lot of instances now, let's be honest. When they recruit these kids, you know, they come to your house and they give you this song and dance about how we push education. Well, once they get to that university and they get on the field, you know, they ain't really trying. They don't care whether they pass it out, long as they perform out there on the field.
Well, that's up to the person. Now, once you've been given that opportunity, you have to take advantage of it. That's not their job.
But yet, if he's a superstar player now, right, that means he's performing, people are coming to see him in the stands, and the university is making money. So why can't he get a little bit of it?
Okay, so my point is giving him a little bit of it does what? Make him feel better? Other than that, what good does it do?
Okay. What do good does it do?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, see, number one,
it,
you know, even though a lot of kids don't...
Does it guarantee him greater success to making it to the pros where he could really hit the jackpot? No. Does it make him better? No. Does it make him more dedicated? No.
Possibly.
Does it give him... How does it make you more dedicated? Because somebody's
for
giving
some
you
individuals,
money?
For some individuals, that is what they motivates them. Yes. Especially young kids. But I got to go and get that paper. Yeah, I know you've heard it before. That's the first thing they'll say. I got to go and get that paper. And they would do anything again to get the paper. And don't act like a lot of them are not in college playing ball. But that's the main reason for playing, to get that paper.
Well, if only 2% make the pros, then that should be rather obvious, right?
Well, see, and here's where that becomes, that now has, it's 2%, right? It's 2%, and that makes the NFL. See, because you have to take it.
That's across the board, Eric. 2% of college athletes make the pros in their respective sports. Those numbers go, if you look at the actual sport, the number goes down. I already gave you an example. I already gave you that. There's 1,650 football jobs in the NFL for a player. You got to take into account players that return to play again, players in your position, whether or not you're healthy, whether or not you're a starter, how well you're doing on the team. That means it's an even shorter lifespan.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's what I'm going to say. You got to include the indoor football leagues now also, because a lot of those players go and play there also if they don't get drafted. But hold on, let me bring this lady in so I get her input on the conversation. Hello, Miss Lady. How are you doing today?
Oh, I've just been listening for about 8 minutes, but I'm so happy that hopefully they'll get paid the money, those young men that are putting themselves through all that bodily damage, and some will have permanent injuries and pain they'll have to always deal with. They're going to need medical insurance to deal with it. But I'm so glad, because there's an American principle that if you work hard, you should be reimbursed, and they're working exceptionally hard. And I think that, you know, I was listening to a show, and one of the newscasters was saying how they can have parents, you know, some poor kid from some area down in Georgia or wherever he's from, and he goes to a college. His parents don't even have money to come see him play. So at least if they get some, and they'll have, you know, some resources, hopefully, so that their families can even come and cheer them on and encourage them and see them play. I mean, you know, they might be able to buy their mama a car so she can get to work. It's just going to do a lot of good. If they're generating millions of dollars off the blood, sweat, and tears of those athletes and permanent injuries, yes, there's going to be maybe a little more distribution of wealth. It's not going to be fair, but they'll get something. And be it that a lot of them won't graduate from college, hopefully they'll go to a financial advisor when they start getting some money so that they'll have something at least to build on. They might want to start their own business, some small business. You know, that'll give them some breathing space, something to start with. And I'm happy that that's going to be happening.
Well, it's not going to be happening. The only thing that's happened is a judge ruled that in Illinois, at this particular university, they can create a union. That's the only thing that's happened.
Well, okay, so that's the first step. So maybe it might take 5, 10 years. Who knows?
It'll take a long time. Because the NCAA is an institution. And it's a system. It's a system we're talking about here. It's not just like they can just step up. We all know they make these schools millions and billions of dollars, and they sell merchandise, and they make their own commercials, and they get none of that because they have to wait until they get to the pros.
All the food and drink and beer and everything, and you know, they bring money to the city because people come and they go to hotels and restaurants. there should be more, they're owed something. And I just hope this is a start that eventually they will get some kind of payment for all of that they're doing. I mean, really, it's just atrocious.
Going up against the NCAA, man, that's fighting a dinosaur.
Well, yeah, but the dinosaur has been cracked here and there. But, Ms. Lady, let me ask you a question. So you are in favor of these players at Northwestern University forming a union if they are allowed
to? Yes, and I hope the rest of them form a union, too, all over the country. I hope they become very powerful and that they are able to get some type of payment, financial, assets from putting their bodies through all that. It'd be one thing if they weren't generating any revenue or very little, but they're generating too much revenue. You know, for them to be impoverished the way they are, a lot of them, they have their families impoverished the way they are, and they can't even come see them play. That's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. That is.
And most of them are going to go back and stay impoverished. So I hope that they will be smart enough that's an opportunity for somebody with some business savvy to go when they start making money to go get clients. You know, young boys and colleges clients, to give them financial advice. Hey, there you go. I just gave somebody an idea. Because you know what? They're going to need it. Because a lot of them, if they get anything, the first thing they're going to go out is go get them a Land Rover.
Yeah, you're right. A Land Rover. Hit that about something. Wow. Yeah. But
instead of a free and hybrid, they can get 50 miles a gallon.
Oh well, come on now, you got to admit these cats are kind of huge. I don't think they're gonna fit in a Prius anyway.
Oh, they'll make it. They take out a seat for them.
Yeah. Oh Lord, have mercy. That is funny. That is interesting. Mm-mm-mm. Wow. So,
yeah.
Hey, would you like to explain? I see Granny was talking about a what is it? Trust. You said it's already been done. You want to expound on that a little bit?
That's what she was saying is something that anybody can do. The government's not going to make that public policy. That's inherently built into the system. That's something that that's up to each individual to do. So mm-hmm. no institution is going to mandate that you create a trust. All the information is out there. You have to do that on your own. So it's already available, having a trust. I understand what Granny is saying in that regard. I'm just saying that particular individual has to take the initiative to go do that. They're not going to institute a policy, a public policy across the board. You know, if that was the case, man, a lot of us wouldn't even be working today.
Hmm.
Because our parents would have done it. Their parents would have done it. And you would have money making interest on top of interest on, now you're talking about inheritance. See, and that's not something that's practiced in the Black community. We don't practice that. We don't practice inheritance. That's a whole different subject.
It is. It really is. But how? You know what though? Let's touch on that a little bit, because I think we didn't. This conversation kind of flowed over into that. You know, because I really do believe that the football players are basically employees of the university. But let's get to the inheritance part. Why don't we as people of color, do the inheritance thing? Why don't we do that? Is it
we don't have the financial what's the right adjective that I'm looking for? We just don't. We're so concerned with just day-to-day operations that we don't think long-term like that. So you got people on this earth. There are people on this earth who are thinking 100, 200 years in advance. Now, for a lot of people, that's hard to imagine because their everyday lives are so filled with getting from one day to the next, one week to the next, one year to the next. I mean, you got people on this earth who are far beyond that, man. They're thinking hundreds of years in advance. And that's where all of that whole mentality and that whole ideology of an inheritance comes in, is because you're passing something down that is a part of a long-term plan. So you're keeping it in place for certain people to be able to springboard off of and carry it again and again and again. I mean, how do you think money stays in the Hunt families for so long? How does it stay in the Carnegie family for so long? How does it stay in the Mellons for so long? You know, these people, they've had money in their families for hundreds of years. They have gone nowhere. The money's gone nowhere, but in the family. It just rotates.
It just rotates, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And each generation builds off of a previous generation's idea or concept, and it just continues. It's like the earth, where it's rotating on an axis, effortlessly.
So we're
bombarded with survival. You know, we don't get a chance to think like long term and sit down as a group and, you know, plan and theorize and actually be able to put money into all of this stuff. We don't have that luxury.
We don't have that luxury, or we just, how can I put it? It's not that we don't have the luxury, because I think you can start small, and how about we just don't have the discipline to start it and stick with it?
Well, that's part of the equation as well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. So we have, and what we have in the Black community is like little pockets of people who are able to pass things down. Like, just as an example, you take someone like Oprah Winfrey. Most of everything that she's earned is probably going to end up going to charity, which is what a lot of old Anglo-Saxons do. If they're mad at family members and don't want to give them the money or turn it over to them, they'll just designate it all to some charity or something. You know, just like Howard Hughes did. Same thing. Same thing. Mm. But other than that, you'll have just like these little enclaves of families, like the Cosby family, where, you know, that money will be, it's there. It'll be there for all generations. And then I'm sure there's some other ones, the Johnson & Johnson family, same thing, you know, but we don't have it nearly on the level of other groups. We just have it here and there. We just have it here and there.
Okay. Wow. Okay. You know, I really can't argue with that, because that makes sense. That makes sense. You know, you ride through some of the neighborhoods in your city, and first thing you look at the house, you say, yeah, that's old money right there. And you know what it is. You're right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know who lived there. You know how long they've been living there, even though you might not know any of them personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Everybody that comes in the neighborhood knows. You know, that's how it works, though. That's how it works. That's when you pass some stuff down. Mm. And, you know, we have to get to a point of where, you know, I know there's this big, strong push for what I like to call this neo-Pan-Africanism that's cropped up on the scene now. And that's a wonderful idea. However, this is a global economy now, so everything can't be concentrated on just trying to sell to the Black community. Can't do that anymore. That's not going to work. You're not going to make any money.
Really?
No, you're not. No, not for Black people, not for black people doing businesses. They have to go outside of the community. Other communities have already monopolized the black consumer market. That's been going on for thousands of years. That's not new.
So
that's been monopolized, compromised, everything.
So basically you feel that it's just not going to happen. You know, even we start trying to put money back into the community, it's not going to happen because it has been monopolized already.
What I'm saying is black people as consumers have been monopolized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they've always been monopolized. So people outside of the community can always create something or come up with something, and they can count on getting the black dollar.
Mm.
They can count on it. Whereas when blacks go into business, we're concentrated on serving the black community. Well, that money has already been consumed. So we got to come up with something else, or at least use as a springboard a different way of doing it to bring it back into the black community. So we need to come up with more things that are actually outside of our community to generate the income to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
Our community from a consumer standpoint is probably more targeted than any other demographic group. It's blacks.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Because we spend.
Okay, so once again, if we spend, you know, why can't we reverse this thing in our own community first and then branch out?
Because there are no businesses in our community to reverse it with.
My point exactly. So let's get some black businesses in the community.
But how are you going to do that when there's no money in circulation? You got to get money in circulation first. You're in a global market. Come up with marketing ideas. Come up with strategies that appeal across the spectrum so that once you generate this newfound income, then you can bring it back into the black community and then start your businesses that way instead of trying to start your business when you're already economically strapped. That's a double-edged sword. You're economically strapped, but you want to start a business in the black community, but the majority of the black community's money is going outside of it. How are you going to win that game?
Well, hopefully, I mean, if you're presenting a workable and a very needed commodity, hopefully that would bring the community back to you.
Right, but see, that's what I'm saying when I go back to we are preyed upon. Our consumerism is monopolized. So just as an example, what are black people going to come up with in the black community that is going to generate revenue at a level where they can stay operational and make a profit in the black community? We already got the food joints. You already got the hair joints. Okay, now there's strip malls everywhere. There's fast food. What you going to come up with? That's the trick. Given that situation, what do you come up with? You want to sell dashikis and get that thing going again? I mean, that's why I'm saying it's got to go outside for black people to generate the revenue to start creating these businesses you're talking about. We got to be on par with everybody else. It's a global market now. And then you take that money and you bring it back. That's what the Chinese did. That's what the Japanese did. That's what the Irish did. That's what everyone has done that has come to this country.
Mm-hmm.
They've dealt with the outside consumers. And then they bring the money that they generate back into their own communities. We don't do that. We spend it all outside the community.
Mm. You know, that a fact. I don't know. I still say that, you know, if we wanted to really do it, it is a way somehow. Yeah, it's not saying, I'm not saying that it's going to be easy, because it's just not, you know, no, it's not going to be easy. But I think a lot of times, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, people of color, we throw in the towel too fast, you know, because I think we're going with the expectation that it's going to be booming right away, when in reality, it takes a few years before you get settled in and you develop a real loyal customer base. You know? Of course, that's just my thinking on it. He dropped off? Okay. Well, that's the way I think about that. You know, it's, we can do it. We can do it. Let's see, we got in the chat room, the black community is so broken. First, we need to get our minds right. Okay. Okay, the black community is so broke, I guess that meant. First, we need to get our minds right. And you know what, No Errors, you are correct. Correct. That's where it starts at, in our mind. But you know what, though? Here it is. You have to start instilling in your children. Oh, broken. Okay, I thought that was what she meant. Instilling this kind of stuff in your children at a young age. You do. You know, and that's where a lot of times we fall in. And H2O had a good point, had a very good point. You know, the Caucasian, they have their money, and he right, it recycles from generation to generation to generation, because from the beginning of the time the child is born, that's what they're being taught, the value of money, the value of business. Of course, when our kids are born, you know, first thing we want to do is throw a basketball or football in their hand and say, this is how you're going to make it out. It's not necessary it has to be that way. It doesn't. First thing, that is the very first thing we, people of color, a lot of times look at. No, we don't sit down and explain to our children about the value of money, you know, how you make money work for you. Yeah, you give a child money, first they want to do go and buy some Jordans. Or what is the new one now? KDs. You know, why? Why the Caucasian and Korean out there, they going to the swap meet and getting shoes for $20. You know, $30 that look just like Jordans. They don't care. But see, we all about the flash, and the flash is what's getting us knocked out of the box. Now, I know y'all talking about, now, what does this have to do with students and athletes? It has a lot to do with it. It has a lot to do with it, you know, because it took a lot of thought and nuts, I'm going to say it, for this young man to even want to start to battle the NCAA about unionizing that football team. He really did. Now, don't think he just started this. This has been instilled in him from being a kid, I promise you. I promise you. To now, he's ready to stand and get it. You know, our kids, you know, we the parents put our children behind. You know, we like to say, well, the children, no, the parents, we the parents do that. We really do. Now, I may, you know, be just overstepping my bounds, but no, it's my show. I can never step the bounds. But that's what's going on. It is. That is what's going on. And we too, and a lot of us parents, we are too busy out there trying to get our club on, trying to get our freak on, you know, trying to get the hottest horsehair we can put in our head, you know, the biggest fake earrings we can put in our ears, you know, as Miss Lady said, the dang on Range Rover, just so our boys can see us. But when your child come around, you ain't got nothing to say to your child. You know, what you say to him? Here go PlayStation 4. You go and buy him the PlayStation 4. So he can go in a room and disappear. He or she can go in a room and disappear. No. H2O had a very good point, though, and I appreciate him coming on and discussing it with me, you know. But I think that college athletes should be given something, you know. Now, being a union, you know, that may be taking it to the extreme. However, I think it's good enough to where it has been brought forward and mentioned so the discussion can start. That's always a good thing, man, to get discussion started. But the black community, business, money, that's what we need to start teaching our kids. You know, and, you know, when it comes to putting money away to leave your child, just think about the money you spend on cigarettes, alcohol, lipstick, makeup. Oh, man. And on and on and on. You know, if you just take a quarter of that money and start putting it away, man, you'll be all right. You know, and just, when you put it away, leave it there. You know, because a lot of us, oh, yeah, we'll put it away now. We will put it away until we get in a jam. And then, oh, we got to go and get that money because I know it's there. Y'all know it's true. We do that. Everyone has done it. even those life insurance plans where you go and get a loan off the life insurance plan, or you're supposed to be saving money as part of the life insurance plan. As soon as you get it by with you, you pick up that phone and make that call. How much money I got in that account? Well, can you send it to me? I know how it happens. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, it's necessary, but not all the time. Not all the time. You know, all the time. Man, I tell you, I don't know. I going back to what I was saying earlier, though. Yeah, the Northwestern University, I don't think they're going to be allowed to unionize. You know, this just was a little department in Chicago. Of course, you know, the NCAA going to battle it a little bit. And it's going to be an interesting case to keep track of. You know, because this is just one school now. If it gets great game momentum and start rolling and rolling, and other universities, sports teams decide they want to get a part of this, this could be something big. It could be something big. So, now, as I mentioned before, we all know that word union is a very despicable, very despicable word in the business world. It is. But you hear union and jokers get crazy. You know, they call in reinforcements and, you know, how can we get this, you know, word not around our employees? And y'all know it. And certain employees there were hired to spy on you to make sure you're not mentioning anything about unions. So why are unions so bad? What makes a union so bad? Besides, they hold the employee accountable for certain things. You know, is that a bad thing to do? You know, the union's supposed to be what? The employee's voice, right? Oh, okay, I'm just asking, y'all. I'm just asking. Between, you know, college, raising the kids, black community and business, man, we have a lot to work on. We really do. We have a whole lot to work on. That goes back to the quote. You know, be you, Do you know you? And the problem is half of us, the majority, I say 90%, are not even being themselves. They're trying to be somebody else because their neighbor got this big luxurious house, or they done put all four of their kids to school. That's what we want to do too. Well, guess what, dude? They making afford to do that. You haven't. I'm not even gonna go there. But anyway, so those are some of the things we need to really look at. We didn't look at. I'm gonna stay on top of this story about the union though, because I really find that interesting. I want to know what goes on with that. You know, this is just the beginning. I'm sure. Okay, let's see. Well, go do just that and stay out of the... Oh, they're talking to somebody else. Oh, Lord have mercy. Anyway, for those that's listening and not in the chat room, we got a love chat going on in the chat room. Yeah. They're like, ah. But, yeah, they got one going on. And it's amazing. It is. It's amazing. Well, y'all, you know what? I think I about just done talked myself out now. That's amazing. I'm going to talk myself out. That's pretty dang gone good. That's pretty good. But it's okay. It's okay. You know, it's all right. Y'all know tomorrow's Freedom Friday, right? Freedom Friday. Well, we talk about any and everything. We may have some laughter going on. We have some seriousness going on. Oh, this mushy stuff, I don't know. We're going to have that going on much longer, though. They're going to have to take that to a private room. That's for sure. I'm going to create a green room for the chat room. That's right. I said it. I said it. Tomorrow, man, we're going to talk a little bit about, I think we're going to talk a little airplane. Then we're going to talk a little current event. We may talk a little bit more about the president and the Pope visiting each other. And, oh, yeah, before I get out of here, remember the other day? Remember the other day I told y'all about these senators? It was yesterday, I think, the senators and their investments in Russia, right? Well, they have gone ahead and okayed some sanctions against Russia, but it's just for the assets of certain individuals. Now, don't you think this is kind of weird? I mean, some of them got millions of dollars invested in companies over there. A couple of them got invested in an oil company that has some of the highest gas prices on the East Coast. Imagine that, but you didn't know that was a Russian company. Or one of your senators has big-time stock in that. Look it up, Lukoil, Lukoil. I'm telling you, look it up. Look it up. You'll be surprised. You know, but it's just amazing they went ahead and did that. And, you know, I'm keep watching and see exactly what else they're going to do. Because it's just very interesting how they're going to work their way around that. You're not supposed to know it anyway, but since we didn't put it out there, watch what happens. I guarantee you. I guarantee you. Do y'all think the Pope and the President talked about Russia and Crimea and the Ukraine and all that? Y'all think they talked about that? And if they did, what was the conversation? What do you imagine they really said to each other? What do you think? You think it was all pleasantries as they make it seem, or did they discuss some, get real heated about some things? It makes me wonder. What about you? Oh, let's see. Somebody else just threw their hand up. I think this may have been a mistake, but I'm going to call them and I'm going to let them in anyway. Hello, 111. How you doing today?
I'm good. Good afternoon. I have no idea what they were talking about, but one thing I did notice is that the Pope was sitting on the side of the table like and Obama was sitting there like it almost looked like employee-employer from, you know, the Pope was sitting on the, you know, behind the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama was sitting there as if he were, you know, being interviewed or something. So I don't know what they talked about, but just the that picture alone, it spoke something to me. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Mr. Beasley,
did you
for that.
On that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Early in the show, I did touch on that a little bit. You know, it's more to that meeting than they want us to know about. But it didn't look as innocent as they made it seem, put it that way. You know, but hey, who knows? You know, the rumor has the Vatican controlling everything anyway. So, you know, from the World Bank to the New World Order, the Illuminati, and all that stuff. So,
you liable to hear anything for these airwaves. You got to take this and sort it out for yourself. But
yeah. You know, that basically that's what you have to do. And that's why I said, you think they discussed anything about the Ukraine and, you know, Crimea, Russia, North Korea, you know what I mean?
or are they two executives, figureheads,
mm-hmm.
and the negotiations for whatever needs to be negotiated?
Mm-hmm.
Is being done by others. You know, neither one of those guys traveled alone. They each have a large staff.
Right.
I'm sure those are the people working out the details. And they were just having a meeting as two heads of state.
Mm.
So their conversation could have been real light. They left. Executives don't deal with all the details. These most executives, they have managers and administrators. You know what I'm saying?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Right. So,
you're right. That's a very good point.
But I'll be the first one to tell you I don't know. Just speculation.
Yeah,
Have a good one.
All right, you too, Beasley. Thank you for calling it in. All right, y'all. We got 16 minutes left in the show. So if you got any comments you want to make, you know, you need to get on the line and bring it on in, you know. Because of right now, I don't know, we probably won't be going into overtime. Let's see. Granny says, our story they talked about was that the Pope thought America had too much religious freedom. And you know what? You know what, Granny? I can see where they would believe that. I really do. I can see that. You know. And have y'all seen, I don't know, have y'all noticed these commercials lately about the Catholic Church has on the boob tube about Catholics come back home? Have y'all seen that? You know, and I found that so interesting. I said, oh, now they're making commercials asking folks to come back home. Why? Why is that? You know, and as far as religious freedom, you know, I think it's just not in America. I think it's worldwide, Granny. I think now most individuals are, you know, they're tired of the stereotypical religions, you know, that say you have to do this, you have to do that, and you got people doing anything they want to anyway. So most people are claiming they are more spiritual now. It has nothing to do with religion at all. Because we said here quite often on the show, religion is a man-made thing anyway. You know? And I kind of agree. It's better to be spiritual than religious anyway. Now, as far as who you hold as your your supreme being is who you hold. But I think spiritually is a lot better than just being religious. The religious is such a blade. You know, it's such a crazy thing. It's a title, basically. It's a title. If you're Catholic, you're religious. If you're Muslim, if you're in Islam, you're religious. You know, if you're Buddhist, you're religious. You see what I'm saying? and all them labels are done by men. Okay, I get somebody else with their hand up. Let me bring them in real fast. Okay, 111, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Mr. Talk, I'm just tuning in to you.
Yes, sir, what's going on?
Now.
Uh-huh.
I got you on speakerphone. I just tuned in. Yeah, I just want to say there is no difference between spirituality and religion, factually. We have a lot of people who say these things that are just not true. Spirituality, if you ask anybody, what is spirituality? When they start giving you principles and they're saying that spirituality is going and these principles are going to make your life better on a daily basis, and if you do these things on a daily basis, you will also live a better afterlife. Even spirituality people, they have this sense of that we are, they can talk to that spirit. All of that stuff is basically the same, factually. I would challenge anybody on that. When you talk about spirituality, what are you describing? What are you talking about? Is it another religion? Because these spirituality people, they criticize the religious people, but they are one and the same. I think they are. You know, that's all I wanted to say, Mr. Tom. And,
okay.
I'm just going by definition in the actions of anybody who says they believe in spirituality and not religious. I'm more spiritual than religious. What does that mean? When you ask them, you will prove my point. It's just like a religion, the same exact thing. That's it.
Okay. And I see Mr. Knowledge had his, H2O had his hand up, so I know you want to reply to that, sir?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to ask him, how are they the same? How is spirituality and religion the same?
I just gave it to you because even spirituality, anything that has principles behind that spirituality, meaning you do this, you do that. Some people say they're spiritual and they meditate. That meditation is a ceremony to get you to a peaceful place. And it says if you do certain types of things and if you follow these certain spirituality type rules, your life will be better on a daily basis. And even the afterlife, some people say that they're dealing with spirituality, they may have a concept of the afterlife. So it is the same factually.
All right. What I'd like to say to that is the beauty of spirituality, true spirituality, is that there are no rules. That's why it is the antithesis of religion, which by definition comes from the Latin word religio, which means to bind, to tie together. Religion, in essence, is a way of life. It's the way that you go about your day-to-day activities. I'll go with the whole thing about principles. It's very dogmatic. It's regimented. It's a lot of things that we can name. However, spirituality does not fall into that because it's not bound by anything. Spirituality
well,
is bound
well,
by
if you
nothing.
See the definition, well, you got to realize that the word and spirituality has an essence, has a beginning. So it's not always been a just that terminology. When you
we're not
label
talking about
something,
beginning or end.
No. I'm saying you're labeling, you're using the word spirituality. That word started from somewhere. It's a concept, factually. You can't say spirituality is not a concept, which, if it's a concept, it has principles, rules, guidelines. How can you determine whether someone is spiritual or not spiritual? By what?
No. See, therein lies the difference. A true spiritual person is not going to determine how spiritual someone else is. They're not going to bother with that. Their mind doesn't even operate on that level.
So why would anybody say, I'm not a religious person, I'm a more spiritual? But what are they describing? They have to be
describing
their actions, their feelings.
What they're describing is the fact that they do not identify, nor do they relate or practice any type of strict dogma that has the very things that you mentioned, these principles, these rules, guidelines. They're saying that they don't do that. However,
if I say I don't follow something, that is a principle within itself. If I say I don't follow this because of this factually, that's a principle. That's a guideline.
Okay.
All I can do
is answer your question, which is what I'm doing. So that's why spiritual people say that. And what spiritual people allude to is the fact that they have that particular freedom that religious people don't have. Meaning, you do this on this day, you do this on that day, you do this on this day, this time of year, you have to go do this. No, a spiritual person doesn't adhere to any of those corporeal guidelines.
It's a belief, and I can do with that. It's a belief in not having, or not a belief. If I say, you know what, I can do anything that I want. I don't have my God. That's the rules I rule my life by. I will not be sit up here and tell you that I don't try to have no rules or no principles, or even if I say I'm enlightened now or I think differently, my rules, my approach to the world is different than I was little. My principles have changed. I even can say religiously I do things on a daily basis because I try to better my life. I try to look for it. So we all can have it. I'm just saying I'm tired of us playing with these words. People, one says I'm not religious, I'm not dogmatic, but we all use dogma in our own ways. I'm just tired of the confusion. I'm tired of these terminology that confuses us. I'm tired of putting a finger at somebody and saying, if they're not like me, they're stupid. At the end of the day, how do you treat me? You can say you're a Christian. You can say you're spiritual. At the end of the day, I want to know how I treat you, how you treat me, because all those words are nothing. Actions is everything.
Hold on for a minute. All right, y'all, look like we will be going into overtime. Give me a call, 347-838-8622. 7 minutes left in the show. If you want to continue to hear it live, hey, get on the line, 347-838-8622. Okay, I got somebody else with their hand up. I'm sorry, H2O, did you want to respond if I let this person in?
No, what's your next caller?
Okay. Let's see. Hello, 111. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I thought maybe I might put an end to it, but if it's going to end already just with my entering, then maybe we can move on. If not, then maybe I can put in my 2 cents to try to end this little discussion, which could last forever and ever and ever.
All right, Joe. So what's going on? What you got to add to it?
We can end it now, or we can go on to a new discussion.
If we end it now, we're going off the air, so don't add to the discussion.
Yeah. Okay. All right, look, a spiritual person is not necessarily a religious person. A religious person theoretically is necessarily a spiritual person. A religious person lives by rituals. A spiritual person does not live by rituals unless it's his or her own rituals. So a person can be very spiritual, but not believe in the dogmas and the guidelines of an organized religion. A religious person who is belonging to some denomination is supposed to be a spiritual person. Now, I know most of us will get that. I'm hoping that'll end it because then we can move on, because I just got here and I heard Mike and N2 doing their thing, and I know we could last. Okay.
Oh, no. I yielded my time to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, just because we're not.
And I'm just trying to make sure that hopefully all of us understand. So, you know, when I do chime in,
you just confused everything, Joe. Everything that you said is a contradiction.
Everything I said is a contradiction. I should never have punched
you. Everything that you just said, Joe, is a contradiction, Joe. Everything that you just said is contradicting your damn self.
I was trying to help out, but I'm sorry.
You just said that a spiritual person can make up their own rules, which is still their own religion, which is still their own guidelines, which is still their own fucking dogma. I'm trying to let you know we need to get away from this. It's no different. It's no different. And when you say spiritual, Joe, what are you describing?
I thought
saying when you said
it, but no problem, Mike. You're right.
No, 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 no. I mean, when someone says they are a spiritual person, what do they actually mean, Joe? I want you to help me out on that. What do they actually mean?
I thought I did it down to very, very, very definitive basics.
Well, you said that they can make up their own rules.
Yeah, I thought maybe I kind of alluded to that, but if not, never mind, Mike.
But you know why, Joe? I'm going to be quiet. You know I'm right, Joe. If you think about what I'm talking about, you know I'm right. If you think about it, no, I'm not trying to be right. No, listen, I have debated this subject before in front of a group of people, a religious people. They were trying to tell me that spirituality and religion is not the same. And I proved it. I went to the definitions. I know where the terminology spirituality comes from.
What did I just finish
I know
saying?
It derives from. I know where it derives
Mike,
from.
Mike, what
I've
did I just finish
before.
Saying? I said a spiritual person is not necessarily a religious person. And
okay,
I said
so,
a religious person theoretically has to be spiritual because a religious person is following the dogma of some sort of deity.
Okay.
They have rituals like going to church, grabbing communion, getting sacraments, and a spiritual person has his or her own dogma. Did I not say that?
Right, but you said a spiritual person may not necessarily be religious, but then you said a religious person is spiritual, and I say
right.
That's two different things. I'm saying spiritual person has they do things religiously.
Oh, really? I bet you the next show you'll say differently.
Yeah.
When
you religiously do something, you're doing... Listen, when you religiously do something...
That's a different take on the word, Mike. When somebody's doing something religiously, it means they are fastidious. They are meticulously doing something according to their own preset guidelines, which are practically set in stone for them.
Okay. Okay, now tell me, when a spirituality person does that, they do the same thing, which you just described.
I'm sorry I jumped in.
No, I'm saying when you just describe what a religious person does factually, a spirituality person does the same thing. I can guarantee I can prove it.
So, Eric, give me PTSD so I can have as much patience as you, okay? Because I see...
You know what, Mr. Dog? Many people say that I think I don't listen to people, but they never challenge my con. I will write the dialogue, and if, Joe, if you listen to what you're saying, you may be proving me right.
You're right. I said you were right, Mike, and now you're disputing me when I say you're right.
Interesting.
Yeah, but now he's saying you may be right again.
Yeah, somebody help me.
Wow. Okay.
But see, Joe, you came in trying to be a crusader, slipped and fell on your own sword.
Yeah, well, you know. Oh, God. I split myself in half, all right. Houdini, where are you? Oh, geez.
Hey, Joe. It's everyone. And listen, that show, I'm going to try to talk, but it was an amazing thing yesterday. And when I listen, it shows that I need to apply stuff that I know into my life and just do it. But listen to the dialogue and conversation, you can learn so much from people. And it just shows that I think I know what I'm talking about. I just have to apply it in my life. Every single day, which is a religion, which is spirituality, which is a ritual. If I need to change something in my life, it's a planning that I'm going to make my father. I'm religiously doing it every day.
Mike, the word religiously, when people use it in that context, is done in a secular way. It's not done in a spiritual or a religious way. When somebody says they're doing it religiously, they're doing it point by point in a fastidious way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What you're doing, you're taking the etymology of the word religiously, and you're applying it to a non-secular or, in other words, a religious spiritual way. That's not what people mean when they say, I'm doing this religiously.
Well, if you look up the word religion, they will use the word God or worshiping something, but a lot of people can worship their car. They can religiously wash their car. I didn't say if you wash their car every day. You don't tell me that that car is not no God, or that person don't practice that religion, or say if I keep my car clean, I'm going to get better girls. It's how you look at things. You know,
that is certainly a concept you actually apply every day. It's the way that you look at certain things, and it's the way that you react to it. You look at things your way through your goggles, and you certainly react to it your way.
Do you have any guidelines that you stand by, Jeff?
Yes, I do.
Do you stand them by? Do you stand them in the?
Yes, I do. Religiously. Yes, I do. Does that mean I'm a religious person?
No, I'm not saying you believe in Christianity.
Well, then you're contradicting yourself.
No. I never said no. I never contradict myself. I said, you can be a religious person, but you can't. You wouldn't call yourself a Christian. You wouldn't call yourself.
That's what I just fucking said. I'm not calling myself a Christian because I'm not fucking religiously doing something in a religious way.
You do. You just say you do something in a religious way every day. You think you have principles. You have principles that you live by. You have principles that you live by. So
okay.
All right, guys.
You're circling the drain on this. Joe, does Ebony have a show today?
Yeah, she does. It's at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Whether or not she's kind of confused when 5 o'clock is supposed to be because of London time. They haven't changed time zones yet, I believe.
I think it's 10 o'clock there.
Let me see. We're five hours behind there. Yeah.
I'm on the East Coast.
What's the phone number?
Oh, let me get it.
Okay. We're doing that. I want to thank everybody for participating in the show today. I got to figure out why my chat room kicks everybody out when my time runs up. I got to talk
with you again?
About that.
Jesus.
Huh? Yeah.
Beat y'all fucking with you again?
Yeah. You know, but, thank everybody for joining us today. Tomorrow's Fun Friday. Y'all know what that means. The topic is whatever.
It's Fun Friday, Mike. That means you don't show the fuck up.
Hey.
I'm only kidding.
He's not listening right now anyway.
Okay. I always like here's Ebony's number, B's. It's 347-945-7556.
Thank you.
347-945-7556.
Thanks.
Sure.
All right. That I'm talking about right there. Hey, got to look out for my sister.
Michael, I was only kidding when I said that Ebony has a show today. She doesn't have a show today.
She doesn't? Oh, okay.
No, she doesn't have a show. Michael, she doesn't have a show. Everybody else, she has a show. Okay.
Okay. Wow. All right. Great. All right, y'all. Well, we're going to get up out of here. Don't forget to keep smiling. Show appreciation. Forgive with an open heart.
I
learn to
laugh
at yourself. Yeah, I bet you do. laugh at yourself, man. If you can't laugh at yourself, then you in for some trouble. All right. Till tomorrow, 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, 1 Mountain. This has been Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk, and we see you tomorrow. We are out of here.